Look, we're considering an occasional series this year called Big Dreamers. And the man we'll meet now certainly fits that category, a creative giant whose own life story offers such a tale of modern and old Australia. Stephen Page is the man in question, the Bangarra Dance Theatre's long-term artistic director, due to hand over the reins early next year after more than 30 years in the role. Bangarra, as you probably know, tells Indigenous stories through the power of contemporary dance. And in a groundbreaking new production, it's collaborated with the Sydney Theatre Company to present Wajang, Not the Past, as part of the Sydney Festival. It taps into stories from his own family, its achievements, its challenges. We just couldn't resist inviting Stephen Page to join us as we kick off our year. Thank you for being with us, Stephen, and congratulations on your new production.
Thanks for having me, Geraldine.
Look, it is quite a big moment to reflect. Are you doing much reflection, or is it also sort of full on, you haven't had a chance?
I think it's a bit of both. Like, you, there are slight little reflections I have, but then, you know, I'm responding to a schedule every week to keep the ball, creative cultural ball, rolling. But it's been great just to have my head down, and especially with this work and being a story from family's side, so that's special. Yeah.
Well, it is, and I was going to get to that. What intrigued us was that you recently admitted to being more nervous for the opening night of Wajang, which is almost 2 weeks ago now, than at any time in your 32 years at the helm of the dance company. Why so?
I just think because my dad... Look, I've been thinking about my dad and my brother David. David passed away in 2016 and my father passed away in 2010. And, you know, look, I think the older I get to reflect... I know it must be just a natural sort of fated journey of mine, you know, like being, you know, my 30 years, I've been working with mob all around the country that have entrusted myself and Bangarra to tell their stories. Because, you know, we have this platform in the mainstream, and to be entrusted with their stories, and they know it's going to go through this contemporary First Nations theatrical sort of funnel, and it's going to be then played out in this contemporary sort of First Nations space of theatre. And I think when it's starting to now move in as I get older, and just my going back to my own backyard, really, just the reflections and stories, and, you know, I think when it's close to you and when it is in your backyard, I don't know, is it the last thing that you notice, and then that you explore it in this sort of more fearful, daunting way, because the responsibility of me wanting to make sure this story and, you know, the language from my father's country and the inspirations of stories is what makes the fuller flesh of this production. So, yeah, I think it's just because it's personal.
It's obviously the most personal you've done. I hadn't quite realised that.
And as I say, like, you know, I took over this company, you know, say 25 or whatever it was, and, you know, I went to no school to learn how to be an artistic director, and, you know, you've got graduates from a First Nations dance college not getting work in the mainstream because they had this unique style of old and new, and, you know, they saw me as this cocky little confident one pushing me up the front, and, you know, I was okay at curating and putting movement together, and I think, you know, I had my brothers, and then you had other family members from other clans that, you know, we always moved as a mob. We always moved as a family. There was never, ever sense that Bangarra's built on relationships and family stories, you know. So it always moved like that. And then I just think this opportunity now that arose itself, Wesley Enoch was running the Sydney Festival at last year's one, and before he left in his last festival in 2021. And, you know, Wesley's my cousin. Enoch's a cousin from my mother's side. She's New Knuckle from Stradbroke Island there, in southeastern Queensland. So, and Dad's a freshwater fellow. He's a Yugambeh fellow, Mananjali, from freshwater country. And both my parents being displaced from their country, both my parents were taken away, both my parents returned, both my parents forbidden to celebrate and be as, you know, as lucky as I am to celebrate my identity. You know, they were always forbidden to celebrate their identity. So all these sort of personal reflections of my father and my mother has just aligned itself up, and it just over the years, especially since David passed, it was just really just they've just always been in my memory. And I said it must be time and a sign for my for my family to do a work
to tell
home.
The story and to take the responsibility on. Look, I saw that wonderful Firestarter, the documentary that Ivan Omani made last year about the genesis of Bangarra and your brothers and the death of David in particular, who took his own life in 2016. And it really, really struck me. In fact, I was going to write to you, but, you know, life got in the way and I didn't, because I thought you seemed to me to almost know about all the dysfunction, and you hadn't come to terms with it, but you were aware of all the instability in your family background. And one way and the other, you'd found your way through that. You looked more robust anyway. I don't know whether you necessarily felt like that, but you certainly seemed so. Has that been a quality that you've, if you think about it, you've actively cultivated in yourself?
Especially over time, you know, like I said, taking a company as young as I did, having my brothers around, and, you know, like all our mob, you know, like, you know, the sense of carrying trauma, you know, you carry that part, that's just something that's just bled from generation to generation of First Nations people. So, you know, my mum and dad were very resilient people. So maybe, yeah, that robust, resilient shield that was sort of draping over me is probably the protected thing, really. I mean, I think deep down, you're always, I'm always, I'm a quite a fragile man, really. And
well, are you? That's my question. But, I mean, is this exaggerated or not?
Oh, look, of course I am. You know, I think part of that is just being really an honest human and how you accept and watch, listen, and learn. And even as I get older, I'm still the hungry 3-year-old, you know, like I'm really, you know, my culture and it's what I, you know, had to lead out there in this company, but also, you know, caring and connecting my own family and my own mob back on their landscapes where, you know, assimilated clans spend years, you know, going carrying this trauma. So,
you know, sometimes when I've looked back at your comments, you have a bit of a divided soul. You know, you've benefited creatively from all the politics around that trauma, and yet you refuse to be trapped by it. You know, as in the decisions you made around choreographing the big Aboriginal part of the opening ceremony of the 2000 Games.
Oh, I look at that and I just always just look at the power and the message that and the spirit that lies in the medicine of art, you know, and a way of, yeah, having this black voice. It sits so potently in these art forms and in our ceremonies and our songs and rejuvenating language, all of that. I was never, you know, always feel it's our best, you know, protest weapon. You know, it's our best existence weapon. And I just always kept pushing the belief of the spirit of that medicine and the strength of it. So,
but some of your people did not think that, did they? And that they did not want you to, as they sort of was collaborating, and you decided that you weren't going to abide by that. And you also said you were worried about Kathy Freeman. You wanted her to have solidarity inside the stadium. You just know, I'm quoting you here, when someone's carrying that cultural pride, and I knew the pressure was on her. What an observation.
Oh, well, that's because I got to spend time with Kathy during that process, that lead up from the Atlanta Games in 96 through to 2000. So, yeah, I just got to observe her process, you know, and what she was going through, and yeah, just the support. Look, I love the fact that you can have this debate. I love the political side of debating and having that. I was into having the conversation. You know, I love it. You know, I went to Redfern Town Hall. I met all the mob that wanted to, the activists that wanted to boycott. And, you know, and I said, well, let's have a foot in each world. Let me choreograph the boycott. We'll do a big show from down at Circle Clear, and we built up Victoria Park. And, you know, some of my aunties and uncles looked at me and said, oh, look, you little smart ass, you know. And I said, well, no, come on. I said, you know, we're a complex, diverse race. You don't just narrow us into one corner. You know, we should be spreading ourselves, and we should have a true spirit of identity that sits inside that stadium as well as having one outside.
Who do you think you got? Who influenced you to start thinking like this? Because this is hard work.
I don't know. I must have been a mongrel dog in my last life because they punished me with the toughest job in this life. I do not know. Look, I just think I've always just been, my father said ever since I was little, you know, I'm the fairest kid out of all my black skin family, you know, and I used to get told I belonged to the milkman when I was little, and, you know, silly, stupid stories. And so I just always had this curiosity that I'd say to my father all the time, why did he speak language to us and quietly when we'd go fishing up on the river on country? And, you know, as I got older and as I got to meet many different clans and stories around the country, I just think the sense of listening and just respecting and hearing the black voice, you know, like, and just truth, you know, just people accepting those challenges in life and carrying trauma and moving through. So if that's been the cultural fuel that sort of has sustained me, then in one way I'm sort of blessed in a way that I've been able to have those opportunities. But then I'm just always take each day as it comes, because I can't take any of this for granted, you know. I mean, just imagine the arts in this country, let alone being a First Nations one, just to sort of sustain itself, you know. So,
well, you've also seen a lot of vulnerability. I mean, you made the point in a previous interview that there's, I'm afraid, suicide is, you've seen a fair bit of it one way and the other. And so you've been around people you love whom you know are far more vulnerable than you. Now, that also takes a lot of coming to terms with, because presumably you haven't been able to necessarily rescue them.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't want to be known as this sort of, you know, the hero of carrying trauma or accepting issues like this, you know. That's not who I am, you know, and it's not just me, you know. Like, all our mob, all our country, around the country, suicide is a huge statistic rate in Aboriginal families. And we all carry that pain, we all grieve that pain, you know. You have family from mob to mob ringing you in this contemporary life, just saying they're exhausted from just burying, you know, these vulnerable souls, you know. And, so I don't know, it's part and parcel of our culture. But, there's a lot of messaging and a lot of work we have to do in the government.
Do you think it's going to get better? Are you optimistic? I mean, you're hopeful?
Oh, of course, I have to be. I have to be hopeful. You have to be optimistic. I'm really organic fellow. You know, people, Bangarra, I get so frustrated, even just the constant shaping of, you know, these Western systems and frameworks constantly. I think you've got to be able to have a little bit of a foot in each world. I think you've got to allow this vulnerability, this organic process, and that's all part, because we're such a strong oral culture, you know, and, you know, sometimes the Western supremacist system is not the right fix, you know, so there's got to be give a little, take a little of understanding, you know, because, and I think we are changing. We have to be changing, and that is probably, you know, everyone is hopeful.
Indigenous people have to change too, you mean?
All of us. Mm. We've all got to try to, you know, amongst ourselves, Indigenous people are always changing. We're always evolving. We're always adapting. We're always finding, you know, the next lot of English words that try to rip the strength of our spirit, you know. Mm. I tell you, that English language just does not captivate the strength of our culture, you know. So, you know, that's all that white law and all that system, you know. Like, it's just, you look at all our political leaders before us and with us today, you know, they're constantly laying down, trying to have that foot in each world, trying to bring the sense of the black message, the black voice, listening, the truth telling, all of that. It's on a repetitive looping, you know. But I tell you, this government needs to snap itself up and start moving quicker. You know, these leaders need to just start making these vital decisions, you know. They're hanging on. The man's eating his own head, you know. Western supremacy is eating its own head. Look at the climate change. Look at the spirituality and people cultivating people, religious values, accepting all diversity. Look at it. That's where we're at today. And this country needs to get its act together. You know, it needs to start recognizing Constitution, First Nations people. It's got to do it. It's got to act on it now. It has to do it now. Otherwise, we're just repeating the same old looping and the same old broken record. I'm sick of cleaning up white man's laundry. I'm over it, you know. And we've all got to start to be on the other. That's why we're all on our own road. We're all rekindling, bringing language back. We've cleaned up. We're fucking trying to decolonize the colonization. We're constantly building, rejuvenating, and reawakening. A lot of mob now doing that. They're just standing strong, and that's the spirit of this land. That's the identity of them. That's why it's letting us keep pushing this strength forward.
Look, I must say there's a gorgeous quote from you. There's a great sense of hope in me, you said to my colleague Jacqueline Maley last year, I think. That's like the last 7 minutes of a Bangara production. So is that what you tend to leave people hoping by the sound of it, do you? Bit angry, but hoping as well.
Oh, I'm just serious, man. The English language just doesn't really fix the spirit of who we are. I mean, I get sick of the word hope, you know. Like, that's just the resilient spirit just stamping its presence, you know. And that sense of change or hope or we're here, it's more about imprinting that resilient spirit is alive and thriving. And if that's what we're doing in the last 7 minutes and that's what your consciousness is left with, then that's great.
Well, Stephen, congratulations on a marvellous career, and may there be plenty more, even if you're not choreographing it. Thank you.
Thank you, Geraldine.
And Stephen Page, from the Bangara Dance Theatre, is watching his last, allegedly, I wonder, his last creation, Wajang, Not the Past, playing in Sydney till February the 12th before touring to Hobart and then Adelaide in March. And check out that Firestarter, that documentary too, if you possibly can.